This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Weight Management Channel. Make sure you connect with us on our various social media channels such as Facebook, Google Plus, and Twitter to follow our programming accordingly. We are also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Today, once again, we are speaking with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, a psychoanalyst who helps people lose weight without dieting. Today, she will explain what psychoanalysis is and isn't and how it can be of help to you. Dr. Nina, welcome back to eHealth Radio.
Thanks, Eric. It's great to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. Been a while, but always good to have you with us. So to kick things off today, tell us what's the difference between psychoanalysis and psychotherapy?
Well, that is a good question, Eric. Actually, psychoanalysis is a form of psychotherapy, but the main difference between it and other forms of therapy is that other therapy, it's primarily concerned with symptom relief. So it focuses on the problem as the problem. Psychoanalysis views whatever's going on, whether it's depression, anxiety, addictive behavior, whatever, as a symptom of a deeper problem. So I see it as kind of like a weed and a root, and you don't have to be a gardener to know that pulling a weed is not a permanent solution. You have to dig out the root to get rid of it for good. So if we think of the symptom as that which brings someone into treatment, as the weed, then getting to the root ensures that it stops for good. So yes, psychoanalysis, we want to alleviate the symptom, but we also want to make sure it doesn't come back again. The root isn't visible, but you know it's there because it grows the weed. And that's like the unconscious, right? You can't see it. It's out of awareness, but it's in operation. And the focus on the unconscious is another significant way that psychoanalysis differs from other therapies. Another metaphor I like to kind of describe what the unconscious is you can't fight an invisible army. You feel emotionally battered and beaten up by this army, which is the unconscious, but you don't know why. And only by making this internal army of unthought thoughts and conflicts visible or conscious can you see what you're actually battling. And then you can challenge those beliefs, then you can fight. And by the way, and I think this is the coolest part about psychoanalysis and what most people don't even understand, is you don't do this alone. You do this with the analyst. Psychoanalysis is really personal and very collaborative. It's not the cold, silent analyst and patient on the couch kind of thing that you used to see in New Yorker magazine or whatever. It's really a journey that two people take, analyst and patient, and it's an investigation into the past that transforms the present.
I know we've spoken in the past, but and no pun intended, but is everything about the past as we're taking a focus in on these issues?
It pretty much is about the past, but it's not about dwelling in the past. We're looking to understand how the past is actually haunting the present, how different relationships and conflicts and ideas from the past are being repeated in present day. The whole point of analysis is actually to put the past in the past. And I have an example of that. I had a client very early in my training. Her name was, I'll call her Lottie. She was more than 200 pounds overweight, and she came to therapy because she wanted to learn how to say no to her mother and coworker. She was an adult, but her mother just bossed her around. And she said that her previous therapist tried to make her go on a diet, and this caused a lot of tension between them. And so Lottie told me she was not interested in weight loss as a goal, despite the fact that she was 200 pounds overweight. She did not want to talk about her weight, and she asked if I would see her under those terms, and I agreed. So we didn't talk about weight at all, but Lottie talked a lot about food. And I realized that she ate to soothe anything that made her uncomfortable. And often she ate until she was so full she could barely move and she was in constant physical pain because she had eaten so much. But I kept my promise and I never mentioned her weight. And I have to say, my superiors were not too happy with me. One of them advised me to refuse treatment until Lottie agreed to explore her obesity. And another one told me that she had to see a dietitian as a requisite for treatment. So they were really seeing her weight as the problem. And I was looking at it as a symptom of the problem, because no one asked why she ate so much, why she turned to food and didn't really have relationships with people. And I kept wondering why, what forces had shaped this? You know, where did this behavior come from? And so I consulted with an eating disorder specialist who, luckily for me, was also a psychoanalyst. So it was my first real entree into what psychoanalysis was and wasn't. And she pointed out that although Lottie said she was coming to therapy to be more assertive, in our initial session, she limited any discussion of her weight. So she was already being assertive with me. And so the analyst thought maybe that setting limits was a way for her to feel empowered. Maybe she was recreating some dynamic from the past. And she thought that the weight was also a symptom of something deeper, some other problem, not the problem. And by the way, this was not the language of psychoanalysis that I was expecting. You know, there was no jargon about id and Oedipal longings, and this woman did not look like Freud and didn't stroke her beard and didn't look anything like what I expected. She saw Lottie as a human being in distress who needed help. And so as Lottie and I began exploring how elements of her past were being repeated in the present, we realized where all this food was coming from. She'd been raised by a single parent. She'd taken care of her mother. So Lottie was like a little mommy to her mommy. She took care of her mom, but she was deprived of the experience of being mothered. And she came to use food as kind of a substitute for mothering, for nurturing. It was the only thing that she could take in, literally, because she gave everything she had to other people, to her mother and then to other people in her life, to her time, her money, everything. And people left her feeling really depleted and empty. Food was the only thing that filled her back up again. And by eating until her stomach hurt, she was converting emotional pain, the pain of the situation, into physical pain. And so as we were able to help Lottie put words to her loneliness, her anger, all her feelings, she was gradually able to give up this intense relationship to food. And that's how she lost weight without dieting. And it was a very powerful lesson to me that, you know, what you think is going on is really the weed. And you've got to get to the root issue.
That's quite interesting. Now, is it always the mother's fault here?
Yeah. Well, there is a psychoanalytic one-liner that goes along the lines of, well, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. But all joking aside, there is an important difference, I think, between blaming and explaining. So blaming sounds like, oh, it's their fault, it's my mother's fault, it's my father's fault, and that keeps people stuck and just repeating things and just feeling terrible. But explaining, on the other hand, can lead to change. So if we assume that mothers and parents do the best they can, given their own circumstances, their history, their temperament, then you can say something like, well, the circumstances of my childhood caused me to develop certain expectations and ways of being in my relationships, and I want to understand this better so I can make different choices. So, like in the example of Lottie, she learned that her need for closeness and care would not be met by the people who she expected to take care of her, so she turned against those needs and displaced them all into food. But by working through those earlier traumatic relationships, and importantly, by having a different experience in therapy with me, so I kind of became her mother in a way, she eventually changed the way she related to food and to herself and to others. And that's why the therapeutic relationship is so important in psychoanalysis. So Lottie experienced a level of interest and acceptance from me, with me, that she could never have obtained from her mother. And then she was able to integrate this new relationship model into her expectations of other people. So it's not always about the mother. The interplay between a person's just their temperament, their character, their circumstances, and the fit between children and their parents, both mothers and fathers and siblings, even teachers and childhood friends, all these relationships can impact people's psychological development. So understanding the impact of this and changing it via the therapeutic relationship is a huge part of the psychoanalytic experience.
Today we are speaking with, once again, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, a psychoanalyst who helps people lose weight without dieting here on eHealth Radio's Weight Management Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Nina, why not just prescribe medication as an option?
Oh, I have a story for you. So a few years ago, one of my patients checked into a hospital inpatient program because he was having suicidal impulses. And the hospital psychiatrist recommended a decrease in the frequency of analytic sessions. The psychiatrist believed that analysis was stirring up too many feelings and that fewer sessions were indicated. And he also recommended a higher dose of medication to help with the depression and suicidal thoughts. And my patient was just shocked that this psychiatrist would believe that if he wasn't in analysis, he wouldn't be thinking about suicide. He was in total disagreement with his doctor, and he said, because we met so often, that's what held him together enough to stay alive. And even more troubling to him and also to me was the idea that medication alone could provide relief. Medication alone would somehow change his depression. And the idea that medication is the answer to all that ails us is part of this trend that focuses on the brain rather than the mind. And the thing is, in addition to having brains, which are just the physical organs of our bodies, we also have minds. Our brains and minds work together. And so when you overlook the individuality that everyone has, and that's, by the way, the basis of analytic treatment is individuality. So clinical trials and medication, that all seeks to find like a statistical answer to what helps the most people. Psychoanalysis is concerned with what helps each person. So the mind is about what you think, what you feel, why you think it, why you feel it. It's about thinking rather than simply changing your brain chemistry. And by the way, when you change the way you think, you actually do change your brain chemistry. And ultimately, psychotherapy for some people can be more powerful than any medication.
Now, don't laugh here, but what's up with the couch in conclusion?
What's up with the couch? Yes, lots of people wonder about the couch. So Sigmund Freud, the father of psychoanalysis, he initially began by doing hypnosis. And at the time, it was customary for patients having hypnosis to lie on the couch. And so that's the reason he initially used the couch in his work. And then when he shifted into more of what he was developing that would become psychoanalysis, he realized he didn't like being stared at 8 hours a day. That's how he experienced it. And so he had people lie on the couch and look at the ceiling or close their eyes, and that allowed him to avoid being distracted by eye contact. And he was could kind of free up his own mind and reflect as he listened. But what he found was it also helped the patients uncover certain conflicts and ideas that they might not be aware of. So, like from the perspective of a patient, if you don't have visual cues to assure you that your analyst is hearing and understanding you, you might expect the analyst to respond in a way that's familiar from the past. So imagine someone, let's call him Dave. And Dave grows up under the critical gaze of a judgmental father, and he becomes an attorney, just like his father, to please his father, but at the expense of Dave living an authentic life. So one day, Dave tells his analyst that his dream is to give up his law practice and open a yoga studio. So in face-to-face therapy, Dave would see his therapist. The therapist would be nodding, and Dave would feel very reassured that his analyst was listening in a non-judgmental way. But if Dave was on the couch, unable to see his analyst's face, he might think that the analyst was thinking judgmental, critical thoughts like his father. In other words, transferring the past experience with his father onto the present situation with the analyst. And this experience of what's called transference allows the past to be available for working through in the present. So So transference allows the ghosts of the past to be available in the present, and when you heal that past, you stop being haunted by those ghosts. So I like to think of the couch as kind of a time travel device. It allows you to return to your childhood or different parts of your life to work through unresolved conflicts and trauma. And that, in turn, gives you a new way of being in the present and a new way of looking towards the future. So the couch is pretty cool, isn't it?
It is, and it can be quite comforting as well. Always a pleasure to have you, Dr. Nina. We always enjoy your spending some time with us. Where can our listeners find you online, take advantage of your resources, and also how can they be in touch as well?
They can do all of those things. They can reach me at winthedietwar.com, and through that they can access my YouTube video series, which is called The Dr. Nina Show. Lose Weight Without Dieting. They can access my podcast, my blog, and also get learn about my online programs that I'm now offering, and they can email me as well.
Well, once again, we thank you for your time, and we certainly look forward to the next conversation right here on eHealth Radio. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
And you're more than welcome. We have been speaking with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, a psychoanalyst who helps people lose weight without dieting. And for more information and for contact, simply visit winthedietwar.com. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Weight Management Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit ehealthradionetwork.com.